Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency Credit Canada. The financial services industry spends an enormous amount of time, an enormous amount of energy on having clients accumulate retirement savings, building the nest egg, building. But at a certain stage, if you were lucky, you will change gears and you will start to spend that nest egg, decumulation. So what do you need to keep in mind as you make this shift? It is emotional. It is practical. There's a whole bunch of dynamics connected to it. Brad Gatto is joining us now to talk about that very thing. He is a retirement income certified professional, a designation we don't have here in Canada. He is president of Fiat Wealth Management and the author of Spending Money and Having Fun, Your Practical Guide to a Fearless Retirement. He's in Minneapolis. Hello there.
How you doing?
You begin with a metaphor about mountain climbing. How does that connect to retirement?
Maybe mountain climbing isn't something the vast majority of people have done in their life. And so maybe not exactly personally relational, but I think the other great example there is like climbing a tree. I think at one point in all of our life, we've climbed a tree, or at least attempted to climb a tree. And one of the realizations when you're climbing a tree is when you get to the point where you're as high as you want to be or need to be or can be, is you kind of look down, and it's a daunting thought. Like actually getting back down the tree sometimes is a lot scarier than climbing the tree. And the path is usually different. You don't use the exact same branches or muscles. And so it's no different in life. You're a saver for decades. You literally live below your means. You save at least a dollar some point in time and live a lot of people well below their means so that they can save a significant amount of money with this idea that eventually I'm not going to be able to work anymore, or I don't want to work anymore. And so I need to have a pile of money set aside. And then all of a sudden this seismic shift happens where you get to the top of that mountain, to use that analogy, and you realize, you know what, this is great. And I'm super excited that I made it to the top of the mountain, but now I have this daunting task of getting back down. Yeah. And I've never done that before. Although I just got done climbing a mountain, I've never descended a mountain. And the path is probably a little different. The muscles you're going to use are a little bit different. And frankly, you're not a saver anymore. You have to become a spender. And it's a daunting task.
A fearless retirement is what you're hoping to foster for folks. There are some people who have a very practical, real, and visceral fear because they just don't have enough money saved. The retirement calculator is not on their side. But then there are other people who have fear connected to an irrational concern that they're going to run out of money. You have a very powerful anecdote of a client you were working with who had this aha moment in your presence to see that he actually did have more than enough to live any kind of retirement he could hope for. Tell us about that moment.
So this gentleman, when we kind of interacted with him or kind of found him in his story, he was already retired and had a small pension. He had a Social Security payment. But beyond that, and he had a significant pile of money, you know, being outside of these paychecks that he was getting, and wasn't really spending a lot of it. In fact, if I remember correctly, I think he was spending about $600 a month supplementing his Social Security pension. And we asked him the simple question, why aren't you spending more? Because he had talked about in our conversation some of his dreams, the things that he wanted to do in life. And so then, of course, begged the question, well, why aren't you doing these things? And to which he alluded to what you're talking about, the fear of, well, gosh, I don't know if I can afford to do it. I don't know if I have enough money. And so I just pulled out my phone because there's, you know, we all have calculators on our phones these days. And I just started doing the math of how much money he had set aside versus the $600 a month. And I just, you know, I looked at him and I said, did you know that if you took all of your money out of the market, because he had some irrational fears about the market too. He had one particular stock that he was invested in that just stopped paying a dividend. And that was really that really had him worried. I said, you know, if you just took all of your money out of the market and you, you know, put it all in between your mattress or buried it in your backyard in the Folgers can or something like that. And, you know, every month you went to the mattress, you went to the Folgers can, you just pull out that same $600. Do you know how long your money would last? And he said, no, I've never thought about it that way. And I said, 200 years.
Wow.
Your money would last 200 years. You don't need to be concerned about running out of money. If you were going to have any concerns, it would be how in the world am I going to spend all of this? And the correct answer is probably that you're not going to. So if you have fear around anything, it should be the idea of figuring out how to efficiently pass it to the next generation and who you want to give it to, because they're not going to let you take it with you.
You write that there is no freedom without boundaries. What does that mean? And what does that mean in this context?
Yeah, I love the analogy here of swimming in the ocean. And if you have an irrational fear of sharks, you're probably going to stay out of the ocean, right? That said, if there was buoys set up, you know, in an area in the ocean that said, hey, there are no sharks in this area, those are boundaries that are set up, but those boundaries actually create freedom for you. They don't limit you. Your fear is the limitation. You're going to stay out of the ocean in general because you don't understand where things are safe and where they're not safe. You just know that there's a possibility of things going wrong. And so the boundary in that scenario actually creates freedom. It doesn't limit you. And a lot of that is true of your finances as well. Like if you knew the answers to questions like, am I going to run out of money? If I spend this amount of money, is that going to be a problem? If I stay invested in the markets and we have a recession, is that going to put me on my heels or make it such that I'm going to run out of money? And if you could start to answer some of these questions and kind of put up these boundaries for yourself where you understand where the sharks are and where they're not, it can actually give you that, you know, that big kind of breath of like, okay, I can do this.
You have a whole chapter on this idea of the sequence of return. So we've talked some about the mindset of this transition from accumulation to decumulation. And then there's the math. And there is some very real and, I don't know, concerning math about how you manage that decumulation and the order in which you pull your money out to put groceries in your fridge or take a trip or whatever. Tell us more about what that means and strategies people should employ to ensure that they're optimizing the sequence of returns.
Well, in your savings years, just putting money aside and investing the money and kind of closing your eyes and just, you know, opening your eyes the day you summit the mountain is actually for most people the best possible strategy. Because a lot of times when you actually look at the pile of money and you try to manage it, people end up becoming their own worst enemy and they trail market returns and these sorts of things. It's so different when you get there though. You can't just kind of ad hoc throw money in the markets and just kind of let it go. When you're spending, you have to be cognizant of when the markets go up and when they go down, because we do know both of those things are going to happen. And what we don't know is when they're going to happen and the timing of when the market's going to go up and when it's going to go down. And while that does not matter in your accumulation years, because if you have, you know, if you're the person that comes out of college and the economy is terrible the day you come out of college, and so you're the start of your savings career is in a depressive market or in a recessive state versus somebody that comes out of college in a really, really good time, but you both average the same rate of return over the 20, 30, 40 year period that you're in your savings years, you're going to end up with the same pile of money. It doesn't matter the timing of the return. All that matters is the average rate of return. But when you get to retirement, that's not true at all. You could average 7% and your neighbor could average 7% and your brother-in-law could average 7% and have the same set of facts, but the timing of when you get the returns can make it such that one of you dies a millionaire and the other one dies on Medicaid or dies broke. And it's because when you're pulling money out and using that money for your lifestyle, if you're pulling it out during a recessive state or when the markets are down, you're basically locking those losses in, and that does affect long-term, you know, the outcome or how long that pile, so to speak, is going to last. And so we've got to be cognizant of that. And as fearful and as scary as that sounds, there are answers, right? It's not like it's just this depressing, like, well, there's nothing you do. It just is what it is. And kind of hopefully you make it. It's not like that at all.
So give me some of the answers.
You need to bucket money.
Okay. You need to bucket money.
Need to bucket money.
Do you mean by asset class?
No, I mean by time. So we try to keep it super simple. Anything more than three for most people is too much. And so we have three buckets. So we have a now bucket, a soon bucket, and a later bucket. And the now and the later bucket are the easy ones. The now bucket is the money we plan on using to spend for your fun and lifestyle for the next year or two, depending on a certain set of facts, if we need a year, if we need 2 years. But keep it simple, we'll just say 2 years. And so that bucket of money is going to be basically non-risk stuff, cash and cash equivalents, because the markets are so volatile in the short term that we just don't even want to play that game. So we're just going to leave it in cash. Now I don't have to worry about inflation a ton because it's very short-term money, although it is there. Later money, which is over 10 years. This is the money I don't need for at least 10 years. So I need some of it today. I need some of it soon. I need some of it later, right? The later money, we can leave it in the markets. If we've got 10 years to kind of let it bake, if you watch kind of market cycles, if we've got 10 years to be in equities, there's a 90-something odd percent chance we're going to end up with significantly more money than we started with. I like those odds. It's that weird middle bucket of, I can't let it sit in cash for any more than 2 years because then I really start to lose to inflation. And if I go to equities for anything less than 10 years, I'm not investing anymore, I'm gambling. And so that's where you've got to find some creative ways to get a little bit of growth on your money to kind of outdo inflation, but not be purely in equities. And so there's a lot of planning that goes into that bucket, and it can be a lot of different asset classes. And so I don't want to get too specific because actually it changes all the time and what makes sense in that bucket, but making sure that the time frame of when the money is going to be spent is imperative to how it's invested. The best analogy I can give you here is, can you imagine, Bruce, being 22 years old and you get out of college and you get your first job and you're going to pay 50 grand a year, you know, for 40 years plus, you know, pay raises or whatever. But instead of paying you every 2 weeks, they hand you your entire 40-year career paycheck at 22 years old. They hand you, you know, $2.5 million.
Vegas, baby, Vegas.
Right? What are the odds that that 22-year-old has any money left at 30, you know, let alone 65? But that's the daunting task you have when you retire, is you got this pile of money and it's your job for the first time in your life to budget it out. You know, we kind of complain about how often we're paid, every 2 weeks, once a month, and but it actually forces habits and behavior on people that are positive because you have to live within your means. Whereas in retirement, you don't have that. And so you got to create those boundaries for yourself.
So you, as I said in the title of your book, Spending Money and Having Fun. Why is that in the title of your book? We just got about 1 minute left.
Because this is the fear is what drives a lot of people. And it's the number one emotion that comes out in retirement is, yes, you're happy you quit your job, you know, and then you finally get to do the thing, but the fear of like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I have enough. Am I going to run out? Am I making the right decisions and all that kind of stuff? It shouldn't be that at all. We talk about this every day as Saturday lifestyle at Fiat all the time. And that's what I mean by that. In order for you to have fun, you need to have the hard questions answered so that you can get rid of the fear and not just spend the money, but have fun doing it and not have this innate fear of every time you go to spend money that it's going to cause a problem.
The book is Spending Money and Having Fun, Your Practical Guide to a Fearless Retirement. The author, Brad Gatto. Brad, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely, Bruce. It was a ton of fun. Thanks for having me.
Brad Gatto is also the president of Fiat Wealth Management.